Alex Alcoholic. My sobriety date's 2/23/23. I have a sponsor who often regrets he's my sponsor, and this is my home group. The person I asked to speak tonight, I almost asked to be my sponsor, and I'm really glad that I didn't, because I truly treasure my relationship that I have with him now. We get to go on great adventures together. And I know at the end of the day, I can still call someone when I need to be told, fuck your feelings. More so, you know, in a stricter way than my sponsor will do. And more importantly for that than me is, the constant reminder that every time I see Jordan is that it feels good to do good. So here's Jordan.
Hey everybody, my name is Jordan, I'm alcoholic. My sobriety date is 2/28/22, and my home group is the next door group of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the late night crew over there at Alpha Club. It is always an honor to be asked to speak. When he said that we go on great adventures together, we play Dungeons and Dragons together. For those of you who aren't familiar with the game, I'll just say this. There's a lot of rules to the game. And my God, this man plays it like an alcoholic. We have a nickname for him, which is Saul Goodman, because he's always like a shiesty lawyer with the rules, trying to like get one over on you. Good friend. Really appreciate you asking me to speak today. It is an honor. So my story. My story begins, many other alcoholics, I experienced the phenomenon of craving the first time I took a drink, right? I got blackout drunk, and there were definitely some other substances involved in that activity as well. And for me, I don't know, as far back as I can remember, which is really for me in my brain, only about middle school, I can always remember feeling restless, irritable, and discontent, feeling uncomfortable in my own skin. And like many, many other alcoholics out there, I had found something that completely alleviated that feeling. And so I did it a lot. And so when I took that first drink and drug, it began a 20-year long battle with addiction and alcoholism. And suffice it to say, I have been through it all. I have been to jail because of some shit I did when I was drunk. I've lost relationships. I've lost friendships. I've been homeless and had to couch surf. I've been broke. I've lost jobs. Like you name it, I've done it. You know, and I don't like to spend a lot of time qualifying myself as an alcoholic because of all of the things that I've been through. Because it turns out when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I actually didn't know what an alcoholic was, right? In one of my first meeting this time around, I introduced myself very proudly as a functioning alcoholic. I truly was in that moment, I was very proud of that fact. You know, I had money, I had a job, I had a wife, I had a house, I had a car, I had all of these things, right? And so my alcoholic mind told me that despite the fact that I had battled drug and alcohol addiction for 20 years, that I'm not like you people, right? Because I haven't lost everything, so I'm not an alcoholic, right? But I just didn't know what an alcoholic was. And really, our book defines it really simply at the beginning of We Agnostics. You know, if you cannot control yourself when you're drinking, right, and you can't stop when you honestly want to, you're probably alcoholic, right? But I had a really hard time admitting that to myself, and I would come in, never mind you, the God thing really pissed me off too. We'll get to that. I would come in and I'm like, I don't really don't know if I'm like you guys, you know, I got all these things and da 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 da. And I was saying it in a much angrier tone. But that was generally the message that I was saying. And I would start, I would be the first one to share at every meeting and tell them, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. And so, finally, in my third or fourth meeting, this grizzled old timer, like, literally interrupts me in the middle of my share. And so he says, you know what? If you don't think you're an alcoholic, well, why don't you go try some controlled drinking? The door is right there, the bar is right down the street, and we're trying to be sober here. So why don't you stop wasting our time with your bullshit and just go get drunk? And I said to myself, wow, I just got told to drink in an AA meeting. That does not make sense to me. But, you know, it was funny because, like, during those first few meetings, you know, people would come up to me and they'd be like, hey, we're so glad you're here. Hey, welcome. You know, keep coming back. And I'll be honest, it made me feel very uncomfortable when people would do that. Very, very uncomfortable. And when, you know, this old timer said that to me, you know, it felt like the first time in my life somebody told me the truth and didn't give a fuck how it made me feel. That they honestly wanted to help me. And they told me what I needed to hear in that moment. And even somebody came up to me after the meeting and they said, nobody should ever tell you to drink in an AA meeting. And I said to that person, I said, I don't know. Maybe he's right. Maybe I do need to go get drunk. And so I walked away from that meeting and I said, you know what? Fuck that. Fuck you, old timer. I'm going to stay sober. Watch me. Spoiler alert. I was drunk 3 days later. I tried controlled drinking. I said, well, they told me I could try it, right? So let me try this. Another spoiler alert, ended up blackout. And there was something about hearing the message of AA, about hearing about the disease of alcoholism as it's defined in the book, and drinking, and being in that phenomenon of craving and knowing exactly what I was experiencing from like a clinical medical perspective, that really kind of made something snap for me. And I came back hat in hand and I said, you know, I tried the experiment. It did not go well. And I want to hear what you guys have to say. I'm willing to give this program a real shot. So that was my step one experience. And step two, I really struggled with. Because I looked at it and said, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And I was like, well, I can't do that. But it turns out I don't read so good, you see, because I thought it said, I now believe in God. That's not what it says. It says we came to believe, which implies that it happens over time. You know, it's not an instantaneous change for most. Said a power greater than ourselves. You know, which somebody said you could make it the people of AA, and I'm like, you fucking lunatics? No way. And then somebody said, well, it could be a doorknob, and I thought that was about the dumbest fucking thing I'd ever heard in my life. Then I read in the book, our founder, co-founder, Bill W., said, spirit of the universe. And I was like, I feel like I can, that'll work for me. That's fine. The spirit of the universe, we'll go with that, right? And that was really all I needed. That's all step two is being willing to believe in a power greater than yourself. That's all that's needed to make the beginning, nothing more. And upon that foundation, right, however inadequate, it does say however inadequate, because you do have to be willing to let your higher power evolve, but that a wonderful structure could be built. And so that brings us to step three. And again, I was like, oh my gosh, do I have to like, you know, fucking give everything away that I have and go live on a fucking mountain and just breathe all day to give my life over to God? You know, and no, chill out. You know, it ain't that deep. Really what it is it's just making a decision to follow through with the rest of the steps. To the best of my ability to try to make these 12 steps, you know, a way of life, to live by these spiritual principles that are outlined in the 12 steps. And so I said, okay. And so what it says in our book, when you get to that part, it says, when you take the third step, you often feel like this overwhelming sense of joy and purpose, you know, but that it is essentially fleeting unless followed at once by a strenuous effort to face and then be rid of the things that were blocking me off from God. And that's what the personal inventory is about. And that's what it was for me. I did mine, it was like 16 hours over the course of 3 days. I just sat there and felt like all I did was write. I wrote it in pen, just like, you know, it says in the book. Because that's my sponsor was like a big, big book thumper. And so they said, write it out. And so I wrote it out. Just like it says in our book, again, like there are promises for the fifth step where we begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. And when I had, you know, taken that step to get rid of those things, and it's not like, oh, okay, well, these things in my past are gone. They don't mean anything anymore. They didn't happen. It's not like that. What it enabled me to do was take these really, really dark, horrendous things that I had done and turn them into something good so that I could then use them to earn the trust of another alcoholic and to help them when they've been through the same thing. And so then that brought me to, you know, the prayer and meditation that happens when we ask God to relieve, you know, to relieve us of our defects. And, boy, it feels like he's still working on that one, because I've got a lot of them, you know, but that's why we continue to take personal inventory, right? We continue to ask God to help us with that. And so that brings me to my, like, amends. And, you know, it's interesting about my amends because, like, an amends is not an apology. This is what my sponsor explained to me. They said, you know, you don't say sorry. Nobody wants to hear what a sorry piece of shit you are. You've used up all your sorries, right? What an amends is you are taking an action to make right the things that you've done wrong in the past. And it's interesting because when I went to make amends and asked the people who I had wronged what I could do right, most of them just said, hey, you know what? Just keep doing what you're doing. It sounds like you got, you know, a good thing going. Just keep doing that. But one of the few people that actually gave me an actionable thing was my sister. She and I, our relationship was completely shattered from the things that I had done in active addiction. And when I went to her to make my amends, she said something that a lot of other people did say, which I said, hey, you know, I did this, that, and the other, and for that I was very wrong. How can I make that right? And she goes, well, yeah, you did that, and you also did this, that, and the other. And I was like, oh, shit, I didn't even remember that. Okay, yeah, you're right. I did all of those things. How can I make it right? And she said, Jordan, we just want you to be a part of our lives. You know, we want you to be there. You know, she has four beautiful children, an awesome husband. And that has been one of the most incredible gifts of sobriety is this renewed relationship that I have with my sister. Which again, when they say that you'll have a life beyond your wildest dreams, I never in my wildest dreams did I think I'd be looking forward to going to Bentonville, Arkansas to visit my sister. Actually a pretty cool town though. Mountain biking capital of the world, if you didn't know that. But yeah, no, and it's incredible. I have, you know, she looked at me the last time I went up there and she goes like, she has something that she never had before, which is she just says, I have a brother now. I have a brother that I can talk to, that I can, you know, talk about God with, you know, that I can call when I'm struggling, that can call me when they're struggling. And that was really beautiful. And I'm very, very grateful for that. And so that brings me to 10 and 11. So 10 is just repeat steps 4 through 9 for the rest of your life. Yeah, one day at a time, right? But that is the idea, is that we make this a way of life, right? That we continue to watch for the defects that will arise, and that we continually, you know, ask God to remove those defects. We are conscious of them, and we make right the things that we do wrong, because trust me, I've fucked my life up plenty in sobriety, too. You know, the unmanageability part was really hard for me to grasp. Like I said, I think I'm managing my life pretty well. I'm a functioning alcoholic. So when I did turn my will and my life over to God, you know, I did that to the best of my ability in that moment when I did it. But I said, God, you can take my alcoholism, but I'm gonna continue managing my finances, and I'm going to continue managing my my marriage. Thank you very much. I got that under control. So I am now divorced and nearly had to file for bankruptcy last year. So suffice it to say, whether my life is going well or whether it's going terribly, whether I'm sober or whether I'm piss drunk, my life is always unmanageable, and I always need a higher power to help me grow as a human being. And so then step 11. Step 11 is interesting because my sponsor, when they took me through the steps, they immediately started me on step 11 because they knew I had a problem with the God thing. And they're like, the way that you get in contact with God is by actively searching for him. And I do that through prayer and meditation. And that's what it says in step 11. And I began a daily practice of prayer in the morning, 10 minutes of sitting alone with my thoughts, as fucking scary as that is. And at night, you know, reflecting mindfully on my day. You know, where was I selfish? A lot. Where was I dishonest? Enough. Where was I resentful? Shit ton. Being mindful of that. And that mindfulness exercise, what it did is, there is a purpose to it. There is a purpose to that meditation in the morning and at night. It helped me to become more conscious of my own thoughts. We always say, you know, we want to pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the next right thought or action. That's impossible to do if I'm so wrapped up in my own anger and emotions that I can't even, like, think straight. Becoming more mindful and really, like, mindfully looking at my day and my emotions was an incredibly helpful process to recognizing when those emotions arise, and that giving, enabling me to pause just for a second and then probably make the wrong decision anyway. But still, you know, maybe if I call my sponsor, if I actually pray about it, I end up doing the right thing in that situation. And so finally, step 12. So we always say, if we want to keep what we have, we have to give it away. We have to give it away freely. And, you know, it can be so much ego in me helping other people. That's how much of an egomaniac I am. You know, I kept thinking, like, I would get a sponsor, and I'm like, I'm gonna get this guy through the steps, man. I know this book. I'm gonna get him through the steps. He's gonna, and like, just over and over, failure, failure, failure. And at one point, you know, I called up my sponsor and I said, he's this and that and the other. And my sponsor said something to me. They said, stop for a second. You know, what is it that you really want, Jordan? And I was like, What is it that you really want? She kept asking me this. I said, I just want to win. And they said to me, are you sober? I said, yeah. I said, okay. You won. That's it. That's the point. Because the point is not to get people through the steps, to save anybody else. The point is to stay sober. You know? And I started to take, you know, it's funny, like, I have a sponsee now who is, you know, he's gone through the 12 steps, you know, he's sponsoring other men. You know, a year and a half ago, he's overdosing on fentanyl, and now he's going to college and, you know, being a contributing member of society and his family and all this, and you know, when I met this person, like, I was like, it was the first time that I said to myself, you know what, I'm just, this kid is not going to stay sober. Like, I'm just going to do this because I got to stay sober, and I'm just going to let go, and I'm going to let God do his thing, and whatever, and then, ironically, that would be the first person that I was able to take all the way through the steps, and to see, you know, get a year of sobriety. And they say that, you know, you'll see a fellowship grow up around you. And I'm now part of a new sponsorship, you know, of just truly amazing men in sobriety. And it is the fellowship that I crave, right? For the first time in my life, I feel like I am, you know, surrounded by people who really want, you know, to see me thrive and do well and grow spiritually as a person, who, when I give them the chance, will help me to do that freely. It's an incredible gift. It really is. I have so much, you know, growing to do as a person. My life is far from perfect. But what I do know is this, is that, you know, my dark past and my dark present, right, in God's hands is better than he can do with it something better than I could have ever planned, right? It's my greatest asset, you know, and I try to use it to help other people to the best I can. I try to use it to grow as a man in sobriety and to help others do the same. And that's the real gift of sobriety. It's not, you know, the money and the house and the big titty wife and all that shit, as my sponsor likes to say. It's being able to take the most dire circumstances of suffering and use them to help another person. And that is truly the beauty of our program. And for that, I am very, very grateful. I'm grateful that you guys gave me the opportunity to speak tonight. And thank you.
Sobriety date is February 17, 2023. My home group is YPG. And I asked Bree to speak for me tonight because she's known me since the beginning, straight out of detox. And she's shown me, like, what unconditional love is. She's taught me all about, like, prayer and why it's so important, which is way different than what I ever used to think. Through her experience, strength, and hope, she's walked me through through the steps, and shown me how to live a better, healthier life. So here's Bree.
I'm Bree. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 25th of 2021. It's amazing to be up here and speak for Aaron. Little known fact. When they talk about people who are, like, literally on the brink of death, you know, like, you have, like, a picture in your mind, like, that was her. She couldn't walk, you know, like, she had lost the ability to walk. And, like, alcohol literally took everything from her, you know, and being able to, like,